Welcome to Health Connections, an exploration of people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Let's save healthcare. Okay, how? Some favor a market-based approach, some want the government out of the business entirely, and others say a principle called single-payer is the way to go. What is the single-payer approach, and how does it work? That's our focus on this edition of Health Connections, and joining me as always is Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing. Dr. Myers, welcome back.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
So what's happening in the country right now? When we talk about single payer, usually you have two deeply opposed sides talking about it in kind of an extreme fashion. Those who believe in single payer, those who support it say, hey, yeah, this is the ticket, this is nirvana, this is the way to go, no ifs, ands, or buts. The people who are opposed are deeply opposed to it, and they say, this is socialized medicine, this is going to be the destruction of healthcare in this country, you don't want that, that's a bad thing. I would imagine the truth is going to be somewhere in the middle, and we're going to find that out. What is single payer? To start with, how do we define this term?
Well, very simply, single payer means the entire population shares a common health insurance carrier. So rather than having Blue Cross Blue Shield, Cigna, Aetna, everyone, we would all have one entity that we submitted our claims to and who paid our bills.
And who would that usually be? I think that's usually like a branch of the government or something?
Yeah, usually it's the government, or sometimes we see a quasi-governmental agency. So an example of a quasi-governmental entity would be like the FTC. So we have someone
that the
Federal Trade Commission, someone who has a dotted line relationship but is not necessarily part of the federal government organization. But more commonly, it is the federal or a regional government that has control.
So one of the criticisms from people who don't like the idea of single payer is that it's socialized medicine, is it?
Well, first off, we know that if you use the term socialized, it's a quick way to discontinue any discussions, that it just throws a wet blanket on the discussion. But having a governmental agency as the single carrier does not make the arrangement socialized medicine. So maybe it makes sense to look at, so what is socialized medicine?
Okay.
With a socialized system, there's something else that's different. The government not only is the payer and the financer, but they also own and operate the healthcare delivery system. Best example is the United Kingdom. But in the United States, we also have an example in our current VA system. So the person provides the money, they pay the bills, they employ the providers. That's socialized medicine. But just having a government central agency paying claims, financing claims, is not socialized medicine.
Your comparison to the VA is pretty interesting because it's gotten some pretty stiff criticism about the way it handles its business and settling claims and wait lists and all kinds of complaints there. We, of course, can save that for a different episode, but I just wanted to throw that in there as well. Let's talk about some of the pros. For single payer, for the people who support this concept, they have some interesting points to make.
Generally, what they lead with is that it's less expensive, and there's two main reasons that would decrease expenses in a single payer system. One is that the administrative expenses are much less, and we can talk about that in a moment. But also, with a centralized system like single payer, you have an enhanced ability to manage cost. So we see several things that happen there. We have common reimbursement rates. Because you have a centralized agency like the government, you have more negotiation power to set rates, etc., which is not what we have currently in what we call our pluralistic system. So administrative simplicity and the ability to better manage cost are one of the things that is most frequently mentioned. Also, it's more simple. You know, you have one person paying bills, they pay them one way. Today, if you work in a provider's office, you have to deal with a large number, you know, sometimes double-digit number of insurance companies, and each have their own nomenclature, forms, infrastructure, and it creates total chaos. Let me give an example. Taiwan has a single-payer system, and they're able to track in real time healthcare cost and utilization. To do that in the United States today in our pluralistic system, we have almost a year lag And that's at the best. So you have a centralized system. You have better ability to manage costs, manage data, manage utilization.
Some of the advocates for single payer, too, say this would help reduce costs in part because of the complications you and I have talked about in some previous installments of Health Connections. The sort of the middleman, if you will, the insurance companies, providers, and single payer might eliminate some of those, I guess, some of those overhead costs or some of those intermediate costs between the customer and getting their reimbursement.
Exactly. At 30% approximately of our healthcare dollars going to claims administration, we are at the highest among the advanced countries. So single payer would eliminate a lot of what I call the intermediaries. So we have people in the offices that are helping to file claims with this large number of different companies. Then we have companies that are just filing claims and making sure that they can upcode and get the maximum reimbursement. Then we have people at the insurance company playing, you know, guarding the chicken house, making sure that nothing goes through that shouldn't be paid for, and looking for opportunities to reduce the payment that they have to make. Then we have providers employing consultants and others to try to get maximum reimbursement. Sometimes we have the same thing on behalf of individuals where there might be someone advocating for them and showing them how to maximize their coverage. So we have all these middle people, and they're a large part of that 30% administrative costs that we have. The other big part is the fact that we don't have standardization. We don't have a unified health IT information technology infrastructure, and we don't have common nomenclature. So all that variation, and anyone from business can relate to us, variation causes problems and it costs money. So the more uniform and standard we can be, which is one of the calling cards of a single-payer system, the better it is. It's more efficient.
I would imagine the insurance industry is not thrilled about this idea because it would radically change the way they do business. Would single-payer be the death of the insurance industry as we know it today?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think one of the things that
Would it eliminate insurance companies if the government or a governmental entity is the insurer?
Not necessarily, and I'll tell you why, because we have experience with Medicare. Medicare is a single payer for over age 65 people who qualify for the benefit, and yet Medicare, the federal government, contracts with insurance companies in each state to process their claims, but they process them using standard rates, standard health information technology infrastructure, standard nomenclature. So we have that standardization, and yet we do have multiple players, but there's someone managing those insurance companies. And I think that's one of the big differences, Brandon.
It provides a sense of unity and of unification across these various systems.
Right. Okay. And then let's not forget the other part that's so important, that because we have a single payer, let's use the federal government and Medicare because it's a great example, we are able to better manage costs and utilization. You know, we have standard reimbursement rates across all of Medicare. We have pretty significant utilization management. But we also have very low administrative costs when we compare it to the private sector in the United States. So I think people that have this fear about single payer maybe should look at the examples or experiences we already have in our country with single payer.
Well, let's talk about some of the concerns. We talked about the pros. Let's talk about cons of single payer. What would lead your list? What is, you think, the strongest criticism of the single payer proposal?
Well, I think it relates to having one entity that is the purchaser. So what we have is then the potential and usually the reality of very low margins for the providers.
When we say low margins, what are we talking about?
Low margins means is how much profitability in the system. So physicians that, let's say, are negotiating with the federal government don't have the same sort of power that they have today. Let's look at what we have in the private sector today. We've seen dramatic consolidation of physician, hospital, and then physician-hospital combination groups, so that oftentimes there's communities where there's only one provider system. Why do they do that? They do that to get negotiation clout. There's other good reasons why they do that, but that clout would not have as much impact if they were negotiating with a single payer. So one of the main criticisms of single payer is there's not as much profitability in the system. You can talk about insurance companies, but I'm more concerned about providers. So what happens? Well, providers can get more efficient, which is what we would like to see, but also because the margins are so slim, it could stifle innovation, or it could result in some of the other criticisms that we see of single payer, like long waits, particularly for more specialized and expensive treatment.
Another criticism that actually speaks to me, because I like some government programs, like NASA. I'm a big space geek. I like the National Park Service. I like the National Weather Service. They're fascinating for me as scientific agencies. But their funding is controlled by political concerns. And if you have a pro-NASA president, you know, funding will go up. And if you have a friendly Congress, if you have somebody who doesn't care as much, it goes down. And one of the concerns about single payer would be if you're putting healthcare, health coverage in the hands of a single entity or a quasi or entirely governmental entity, you may have that same concern, almost certainly would have that same concern, that political influences would tell you how much funding you're going to get, and that could affect a lot of people down the line.
Yeah, this is probably the thing that personally is most scary to me as I look at what's going on today with our partisanship and our inability to come to consensus and to have meaningful discussions. Can you imagine in that environment setting the budget for healthcare for all Americans? So that is a pretty scary thought. And if we want to get a glimpse of what that looks like, we can look across the pond at England, who's having a lot of very serious debates today about the funding of their national health system. And some of those debates go, we need more taxes to have more money. But a lot of the debate goes, what services do we start cutting? So I think that's a very legitimate concern. The other thing is, I don't think in today's environment, an increased role of government is something that fits with the general mood of the country. And when I look at political differences, the single one thing that divides us is our conception of the role of government.
I was about to say, this sounds like it's partly philosophical. You and I could run down pros and cons all day, but at the end of the day, some people will be okay with having more government intervention or more government control over this particular avenue, and some people are just inclined not to have that kind of environment. I mean, it's philosophical.
It's very philosophical. So, and then, you know, people will point to, well, the government hasn't done X or Y well. They might not point to the areas where we've done very well. I think there's another important philosophical concern that's maybe a little more abstract. Single payer is used in many countries to promote an egalitarian perspective where everyone is treated the same.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has the same healthcare benefits, and that's seen as a major plus. I'm not sure if that would be seen as a major plus by the majority of Americans. We sort of like our rough and tumble competition for the things we have or don't have. So I'm just not sure where that philosophical principle fits in our current environment.
Yeah.
I'd like to think it's an appeal, but I'm not the majority.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about what the majority thinks, or as close to it. You have told me that words matter in terms of public polling, in terms of what it is we choose to describe something like single payer or universal coverage or Medicare for all. It could go by different names and some different approaches. And what you found, at least in a 2016 Kaiser poll, was that when the words single payer were used, 44% of people thought of that favorably. They were okay with that. That's still less than half, but maybe more than would have been the case 10, 20 years ago. Is single payer becoming more appealing to people?
Yes. In the past year or so, Brandon, there's been an uptick in the percent of Americans that say they favor single payer. But back to the poll you mentioned, I think it's just fascinating about polls. How you ask the question and what words you use have a major difference. So we've heard Bernie Sanders and others talk about Medicare for all. We know what Medicare is,
record. Yeah, well, we know what it is.
63% of Americans said yes, they feel favorable are very favorable about that. But when you say single payer, only 44%, because that's abstract and we really don't know what it means. It gets confabulated with socialized medicine, et cetera.
Which came in even lower at 38%.
Right. You put the socialized label on things in America, and we still, a large portion of Americans have an aversion to that term. Now, interestingly, younger folks don't have that aversion that baby boomers or people that are older.
Sure. All right, so let's go from then the terminology, which we've introduced just a second ago, what we call it matters, and talk about some of the differences. For instance, when we say single payer, we don't mean universal coverage. Those are actually two different concepts.
Yeah, to me, this is one of the more important things, is that single payer is not universal among universal healthcare systems. So let's untangle what I mean. Single payer is often seen as a way to get to universal coverage. And the reason is that we think there's sufficient money in the system. The U.S. has the most expensive system. We spend about 30% more than the second closest country in the Commonwealth Fund comparison. That would be Switzerland. But we spend it on the wrong things. As I've already said, 30% is for administration. So that's how single payer and universal coverage often get linked. There's money in the system, we just need to redirect it. But I think the other important point is that universal coverage does not have to be linked to single payer. In the Commonwealth study, there's 11 countries. U.S. is ranked last on cost and outcomes, but among those 11 countries, only three have single payer. So other countries are better cost performers with better outcomes without single payer. So this leads me to the thought, Brandon, that I am convinced if we could ever get to the point where we could have a genuine, transparent, people-oriented discussion about healthcare, I have faith in the Americans to find an innovative way to address our problems in a uniquely American way. We could look to the other countries who do it without single payer or with single payer, but we could learn from that and create our own system. The problem is we're not having those transparent, thoughtful, inclusive, patient-centered, people-oriented discussions.
What is your optimism or lack thereof or feeling in general that we can have those kinds of discussions? If more people are agitating for single payer, which is what we're seeing from some of these poll results, is that message going to trickle up to the people who get to make these decisions in Congress, especially in the wake of the failure of Republicans earlier this year to totally dismantle ACA or to totally repeal ACA, and now they're looking at some different options? Does single payer have a better foothold now?
I don't think that single payer itself is going to be the vehicle. I think we're in a scary time where people are not listening, and I think it's emblematic to look on the news and see two sides shouting at each other. We're hearing about this protester group against this protester group. We're hearing about our president against even the GOP leaders, and they're just shouting at each other, and in that environment, you can't listen. I have the hope that we're going to reach a tipping point where we say, this is not who we are as a country, and we need to sit down and listen to each other and be genuine and authentic in trying to find solutions that work for people across the country. Now, you mentioned the Affordable Care Act. Next week, Senator Alexander is holding hearings to look at one slice of the Affordable Care Act, and that's support for the individual markets, which we've talked about before. I'm going to be watching those hearings closely to see, is it genuine? Is it authentic? Is it transparent? Is it inclusive? Does it really take into account the needs of the citizens? So I will have a better sense of, you know, a barometer of, are we reaching a tipping point where we've had enough of yelling at each other and totally disregarding the view of the other?
We'll be watching, too, and I'm sure we'll talk about it as our conversation continues to evolve. Dr. Carol Myers, an associate professor in the University of Tennessee College of Nursing, and our guest here on Health Connections. A reminder, you can tweet us with your questions at WUOTFM or send an email to newsroom@WUOT.org and use Health Connections as your subject line. Dr. Myers, Always a pleasure. Thanks for talking with me today.
Pleasure's all mine, Brandon.